Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Okay, joining us from Tokyo is the Irish Times rugby writer Gavin Comiskey. Gavin, thanks a million for taking the call.
No problem.
So the eyes of the world, or certainly Southern and Northern Hemisphere rugby, were on Auckland this morning, but you were in Tokyo to see Ireland comprehensively beat Japan. It was 35-13, five tries, four of which came in the first half. Overall, what was your assessment?
As Joe Schmidt said, he said it was like, for the players, it was like playing in deep water. It was the humidity factor and all that. Like, the World Cup in 2 years' time won't be as hot as it has been here in the last... When it gets hot here, it's rainy season, but when it gets hot in Tokyo, it's unbearable nearly. He was... the whole point was to get out the gate and get them put away quickly, and that's exactly what this team did. They had their four tries banked at half time, and then they were jaded in the second half, and again, they're just hanging on in there. It's a massive kind of learning curve in that regard, that if you don't put away this team in these kind of conditions, you're in for a world of hurt. But they did. They got it done. They were super clinical in the first 20 minutes.
Are they playing in any way of a different way to what we would normally expect from this Ireland team and from Joe Schmidt, given that you've seen them up close now in the two tests against the Japanese side? We've only seen highlights, so we wouldn't necessarily have sat down to watch the whole game. But is there anything that struck you about the way that Ireland have played in these two matches?
No, they're playing the way Joe Schmidt's always coached. It's more like the way you would have been. We probably would have seen Leinster teams at Joe's peak with them, simply because he's got all these young guys who do exactly, precisely what he tells them to do. So the ruck clean-outs and all that. You've got guys like Treadwell, Ryan. Keith Earls has been definitely the MVP on tour. He's been brilliant. But the forwards, the guys, his Conans, his Levies, his Van der Flyers, are in there, and they're going in together, the perfect techniques that Schmidt coaches. It was like, today was fascinating for me. I watched Joe run the warm-up before the game, and it's vicious. It's non-stop, you know. He's got them for this 7 minutes where he just puts them through their drills. And so what happens is, and that's what all his training sessions are like. So when these guys, and he's got kids who are just like sponges, so when they hit the pitch for kickoff, there's not nerves about being on their second international cap or anything like that. They hit the ground running and they just play the Schmidt way. So in that regard, it's been a really, really valuable 3 weeks.
Overall, from what you've seen from some of the younger guys, when you take the fact that the Lions guys are going to be back in harness in the next 6 months, there's going to be a couple of guys back from injury, has he extended his resources? Has he extended the options that he has available to him significantly? Or for the vast majority of the guys you've been watching over the last two tests, was it merely just great being there for the experience and getting that game time, getting that training pitch time under Joe Schmidt, soaking all that information up, and it'll come in handy someday, but maybe not in the short to medium term?
Oh, no, it's definitely going to come in the medium term, not like November. But we were talking, like, the one thing when we had Joe after the game, because the last time we're going to see him for a while, was, Joe, from what you've just learnt now in the last, if you had that Argentina game and now, again, in a month's time, would Ireland be okay, you know? And he was like, I don't know. Yeah, he wasn't sure. And we were in the middle of this, the All Blacks game was on, and it was 20 minutes in, and he knew that Peter Manny was involved there. But he was talking about, for starters, like, if you just take it down to the scrum half, he goes, Kieran Marmion has now had a run, and he said he was incredible. That's how Schmidt described him over the last few weeks. And then he goes, I gave Luke McGrath a go last week, and he was superb as well. So now he knows he's got scrum half. We're trying to push him to go, which of these guys, who of these players is going to hang on in there in November when you get all your lines back? And Joe being Joe, he wouldn't bite down. Like, we're like, will Andrew Porter come back? He's definitely sending Andrew Porter back to Leinster as a tight head prop. He's got two caps for Ireland now. He's sending James Ryan back with loads of very raw James Ryan, who could turn into, who knows, like some kind of hybrid version of Mal O'Kelly and Paul O'Connell down the line. And Dan Levy. I could go on and on here, but in November, it's very unlikely we're going to see, you know the team we're going to see. You know, yeah. From just watching the lines this morning, you know.
Is there any part...
There's real signs of changing. Sorry, go on.
As difficult, if not impossible, as it is to get inside the head of Joe Schmidt, is there any part of him at all that regrets not being part of the coaching setup in New Zealand? Is he absolutely delighted with what he's achieved over the last couple of weeks, I wonder?
Oh, I think Joe made it very clear. Well, he didn't exactly say it, but if Joe had gone in and been Gatland's assistant, for starters, it's just not going to work for an Eddie Jones or a Joe Schmidt to take a knee. Like Andy Farrell's in that kind of period development of his coaching career. These men are, they're alpha males. They wouldn't have, it just wouldn't have worked for him to come in. Like, take Eddie O'Sullivan. He went in and was an assistant coach to Clive Woolgard in 2005. And Eddie will say yourself that he was too far advanced as a head coach, you know. So, no. And also, it damages. He knew how damaging. It's damaging enough for Ireland to have 11 guys there. Like, are we going to get Peter Manny back in good nick? Will Sexton and O'Brien get through the next two tests? You know what I mean? We know we're going to lose one of these guys for next season until probably the Six Nations. It's just look through the history of their careers. But what, to lose Joe Schmidt on this tour? No, it would have been too damaging. He's built, he's laid the groundwork, for what comes now in the next 2 years. Like, of this team today, Andrew Conway's established himself in Joe Schmidt's mind, you know. Kieran Treadwell or James Ryan, one of them is going to dislodge Dev Toner, who, by the way, he's played very well today in his 50th cap. But he's going to dislodge them probably come the World Cup. If not by the World Cup, just after it. We didn't know that. We're seeing this now. Andrew Porter, as I said, tight head prop. That's real. That means Tadhg Furlong. The Tadhg Furlong, Andrew Porter thing can become like the Keane Healy, Jack McGrath thing. We're learning this on this tour. There's huge value. Reece Ruddock, I should mention him because he's just been a brilliant captain.
Well, talk to me about the continued development of Gary Ringrose now that he has played a succession of tests as the starting 13. And surely must feel extremely comfortable now in the Joe Schmidt environment.
I'm actually flicking through Joe's quotes here because I'm writing my pieces before I fly home. And the way he described Gary Ringrose was, I'm paraphrasing, he basically said that Gary had only established himself basically because of Jarrod Payne's injury. And again, this is Joe's view of him. We've all known that Gary Ringrose, a lot of people have known Gary Ringrose is going to nail it down. But he defensively, what he's done on this trip in all three games, like he's himself and Jack Conan, I think are the only two guys. No, there were seven guys who've started all three games. I definitely know that Jack Conan and Gary Ringrose have been the absolute ever presence. And it's Ringrose, he scored a nice little try today when they made a mistake. But his defensive work now, there was one period last week where Japan got a run outside and it was 4-on-1 with Ringrose against four guys. And he backpedaled at the same pace they were sprinting at him. It was just defensively, he's just learning and learning. And Joe's thing about him was, he said, yeah, he's just got such a feel for the game. Schmidt never gives out these kind of real open, blatant compliments like that. And he goes, the kid just has got this unbelievable feel for the game. Like he's going to base his attack and defence around him for as long as he's in. It was just Gary's performances in the last three games that just reinforced it.
The back row, which started today, was Reece Ruddock, Josh van der Fleer and Jack Conan. I mean, that is a back row that you would be probably happy enough to bring into a Six Nations game. They are laying down real markers with the return to training of Jordy Murphy, the fact that we've got Jamie Heaslip injured still to come back. You've got the two guys down in the line, sort of the three guys, Stander, O'Brien and O'Mahony. If they're all ready to go for November, how is he going to pick a back row out of those guys?
Yeah, and do you know what we're going to be talking about, Dave, for the next couple of months? Leinster are going to have arguably world-class players who can't get onto their bench. Funnily enough, after the game, we talked to John Cooney, who won his first cap. That means eight new caps on this tour, who is leaving Connacht because he goes, look, I look at Ciarán Marmion and he's nailed on. I want to play rugby. When Pienaar's left Ulster, it was just too good a chance for me as a pro. I have to take it. I'm going to Belfast. So that's the one we're going to be coming back to about all this. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, who are you going to pick? Because, like, Reece Ruddock's undroppable now. Like, my opinion on Dan Levy didn't train on Tuesday. He was the best player on the pitch last week, easily, in my opinion. And he had a bit of a gash in his head, so didn't train Tuesday. So it meant Joe could bring Sean Reedy on. It meant Joe could use every player he brought on tour, which was obviously his plan from the start. But I don't know how you drop Dan Levy after what he did last week. And that's going to be the problem that gets rammed home every week for Leinster.
Yeah.
Granted, they'll have injuries, but they just have too many back rowers of a high standard.
Yeah, that's Dan Levy makes it eight. I didn't mention Levy there. That's
crazy.
8-3 if they're all fit for the November test.
Yeah. Yeah, it's obviously we know they're not going to be all fit, but even six of them. Look at it, even go back to November. The Lions captain couldn't get on the Ireland bench until the middle of the Six Nations. Josh van der Fleer had the position. Like Peter O'Mahony didn't play against the All Blacks last year. Because he was back fit, he was playing, and he wasn't considered good enough. It was just the way the whole balance worked out. And like Peter O'Mahony wouldn't be the Lions captain if Jamie Heaslip hadn't got injured in a warm-up before England. Mm. So we're doing okay. It's not a bad thing, you know. Yeah. It's like, and we've got the right people in charge to make, it's their problem, like so. But David Nusafora was sitting there on the side of the pitch today. I know for a fact he'd like to shift a few of those back rowers up to, I don't know for a fact, but I know it, that he's going to get sort of spread the wealth around the other provinces. It's a problem that has to be solved by Irish rugby in the next few years.
Yeah, I think it's something they needed to be a little more. I think in the players as well, if they could follow the John Cooney example and be as open-minded as he's been going from Leinster to Connacht and now seeing an opportunity in Ulster and just deciding, you know, my career is very important. That's where I have to go. Maybe we really would start making progress in that department. We've been reading your notes from Japan and the Irish Times over the last couple of weeks. What are you leaving Japan with? What kind of an impression are you leaving the place with bearing in mind that we're all hopefully going back there in a couple of years' time for the World Cup?
One of the most interesting things for me is Japan and World Rugby have expressed this a little bit. They're in the shadow a bit of Tokyo 2020. So as far as them getting their finger out and organising the World Cup, like Wi-Fi, now granted this was more the Japanese Rugby Union, Wi-Fi has been an issue over here, if you can imagine it. It's we had to kind of force the issue to make sure they had Wi-Fi in the stadium, which seemed crazy, you know. Like you wouldn't be having that argument in the Midlands for a GAA qualifier, you know, and like now we're having it before a test match in Japan 2 years out from a World Cup. So they have to get their arms around that one. It actually kind of bodes well if Paris gets the Olympics, the next Olympics, and the other one goes to LA. It's going to be harder for the World Cup to go to France in 2023, if you know what I mean. So it might benefit actually Ireland still striving for that World Cup. But Japan has a lot of work to do to put on a World Cup. It's down the pecking order as a sport, but this place is like nowhere else in the world. Organisational wise, they're going to get it done. It's the cleanest place I've ever seen in the world. It's a transport system from a sci-fi movie. It's so good. It's phenomenal. Like once you get your head around it, you can zip around the place. I went off to interview Robbie Deans, and he said like some people are not even going to notice a World Cup's on in this city. He meant it in a good way.
Right, okay. Well, so my last question was going to be about the atmosphere that was brought to the two tests by the Japanese supporters, by the Japanese rugby fraternity in general. If I was going to ask you, do you think it's a country that will embrace the World Cup and fill the stadia that are hosting games not involving the Japanese side? Maybe not, if the place can be so big and so easily distracted by other activities that there may be people within Tokyo that wouldn't even know the World Cup is taking place.
Well, that's the thing. I think they will get them around this. So for the first game in Hamamatsu or in Shizuoka, where we went last week, there's been 30,000 people at both games in 50,000-seater stadiums, okay? And for the game last week, the whole top tier was school kids who were made put on their school uniforms, even though it was a Saturday, and come in and watch the games. So they will fill them. They'll figure out ways of filling them, and they'll get it. As a society, once they get people going, everyone shows up, and that will happen. They will fill everything. What they want to do, though, is they want to make sure the hearts of, like, whatever, there's 27 million people, 127 million people. They want to get them behind the Japanese team. That's key. So what you're probably not going to see when the draw for the World Cup and the schedules come out in September is you won't see Ireland playing Japan in the opening game. Because Japan have to win. You probably won't even see Japan against Scotland because Japan have to win that match.
We'll see Japan against Ivory Coast or somebody.
Yeah, I mean, the World Rugby have been over here, the delegation, and we've been asking them about that, about how you're, what are they going to do to get these kind of situations right and look for the minnows. And it sounded through reading between the lines that there's an awful lot of work to do just for the whole formal aspect of Japanese society to kind of get their head around that kind of the common sense element of what's needed to kind of run a tournament. So there's plenty of work to do, but just from watching the way the society works, they're definitely going to get their act together. And you'll find that the stadiums are going to be full of kids for every single game. They'll find a way of packing them in because there's people everywhere here. It's a brilliant place, and they will put on an extremely different and extremely unique rugby to World Cup.
Gavin, great talking to you. Safe trip back, and we'll chat to you when we get back home.
Nice one, Dave.
Gavin Cumsigi there of the Irish Times giving us his thoughts on Ireland's two tests win over Japan earlier this morning. They wrapped it up with a second test. 5 tries in the game, and all looks rosy in the Joe Schmidt Garden.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.